Today we're looking at viruses, how they infect not just our bodies and our machines, but our imaginations and the culture as a source of terror and excitement and fascination. I spoke earlier this hour with Bill Wasik and Monica Murphy, authors of the new book Rabid. Bill Wasik, who is an editor at Wired magazine, joins me again now. Bill, before you began working on this book about a real virus with Monica, virality meant something different to you. You wrote this book, which I love, called And Then There's This, How Stories Live and Die in Viral Culture. So going viral, that phrase, at what point did we decide that bits of text or video or music content were or could be like viruses?
Well, yeah, you know, that metaphor goes back to at least as far as Richard Dawkins, who, you know, invented the word meme. And at the same point that he invented the word meme as a parallel for gene, right, at what one sort of biological vision for how culture could spread. He also mentioned that that was sort of like a virus. But those two things are actually pretty different. And I think it's telling that the one that, you know, has really taken off is the viral idea. And, you know, I think it started to take off in popular culture in the late 90s. I think Hotmail, the people who ran that were, I believe, the ones to popularize the term viral marketing, because the idea was, you know, their service took off really, really fast because they were able to use this kind of word of mouth spread through electronic means to just grow enormously in a very, very short period of time.
And as you've watched this over the last 10 years and become a virologist of sorts, have you figured out what kinds of ideas or things are most likely to become viral?
Well, there's cats.
Yes.
And porn. But no, when we get beyond the sort of cat porn industrial complex, I think, you know, it's...
Is there cat porn, by the way?
I don't... You can Google that, Kurt. I don't want any responsibility for that. I think that it's stuff that hits us very quickly and speaks to the social relationships that we already have. And part of the reason why so much of what spreads online is funny is that we love to make our friends laugh, and we'll make them laugh with a joke if we can. But if we think we can make them laugh with a video that somebody else made, we'll do it. It's like part of what we love to do.
Except, for instance, and there are these moments when it becomes – it seems more apt to call them viral because people are just looking at them because everybody's looking at them, like the Gangnam Style video, which, it, you know, it has 1.2 billion views in a world where there are only 2-point-something billion people on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It is funny, though, to think about how that's sort of similar to what we used to get from television, right? Like back when we only had three networks, part of the whole appeal of television was everybody was watching the same stuff. And so not only would you get the entertainment value of watching the television, you'd also get the value of, you know, talking about it at the water cooler the next day. You know, but in a world with all these channels, we don't really have that much commonality. And so I think that these super viral things like Gangnam Style become kind of the new water cooler thing. So you're right that on the one hand, it's the sort of greatest example of virality. But on the other hand, it's oddly and sort of comfortingly old fashioned.
And I wonder if now that everyone is aware of this idea of virality, and if you're an artist or a writer or a filmmaker or a musician or a marketer or almost anything, it seems to me you're going to be consciously aiming toward virality in the, you know, work you produce. That's got to be shifting culture.
No, for sure. I mean, and this is the Pandora's box of measurement. You know, a lot of things can be measured today. You know, the clearest example of this, and maybe just because it's the world I come from, is the media business. I mean, think about those most emailed lists at these newspapers. And even though I think in most newsrooms, they're not saying, you know, hey, foreign policy reporter, like get to the top of the most emailed list or else. Nevertheless, you just can't help but have a feedback loop between that data and what you do. And it is a real Pandora's box, because even if you're not consciously setting out to change what you do to fit what gets hits, it's inevitable. You can't help but think about it and try to deconstruct it. And then before you know it, you're trying to engineer it.
So what became a benign version of viral transmission maybe isn't so benign after all.
It's also true, though, that as time has gone on, I have become a little skeptical of the viral idea, whether viral is exactly the right metaphor for what's going on. One of the problems with the viral metaphor is that it downplays the agency that the audience has, because that's really what's different. I mean, if anything, virus conjures up a really passive group of spreaders and imagines that the creative act is all, and that if you can, craft the thing in just the right way, that, it compels people to spread it. But in actuality, we're sort of in the opposite situation. We're in a situation where things can spread really quickly in this truly viral way. But the reason is that the spreaders have a lot more agency, and it means that they call the shots more, and that means a certain different types of things spread.
Bill Wasik is an editor at Wired. He wrote the book And Then There's This: How Stories Live and Die in Viral Culture. Thank you so much, Bill.
Well, thank you, Kurt.
Justin, he's been putting up videos on YouTube. Oh,